This month in the Backlogger Game Club, where Deku's scrubbing it up with Zelda Majora's Mask.
Alright, so who's who in this podcast?
Who's who?
Yes, it's I'm Backloggery, I'm Skygore, so
I'm just AI-kun.
Yeah.
Who's AI-kun? Who's AI-kun on Twitter?
Yep.
Or Cake Slam. What's the deal with Cake Slam?
I don't actually remember. I think we were just like, we need to come up with like a sick name for me because no one knows how to pronounce my other name. And so I was like, I want something that people can pronounce. And I want it to be about cake, but I want it to sound really badass. And we thought that Cake Slam, like, sort of.
Yeah.
Faces.
I think
but then now I have all these random people calling me Cake Slam. Like, when they meet me in real life, they're like, oh, you're Cake Slam. I'm like, I'm who? Oh.
This is why I have two accounts. T-Rose for my video games, Ski Gores for my real life, so... Backloggery has to deal with the real games, and yeah.
I just stick with one identity. You know me as Paper Link.
Mm-hmm. See, but I can say that. No one knows what the hell my name says. Like
Aikun.
See, like it's like everyone says it differently, and so I was like, I want something that everyone will say the same. But then I didn't actually stick with it. I just made it kind of a joke. But then it, like other people sort of grasped onto it. So now I'll just be like. Rolling around and someone's like, hey, Cake Slam, and I'm like, what the hell? And I'm like, oh, yeah. For like 4 months.
I always thought your name was a reference to Super Monkey Ball.
That's what everyone says. But it's not. I just, the first half of it was my original Final Fantasy XI name, which I only got from hitting my hands on the keyboard. I was like, I don't know what I want my character to be named. Let's see what happens. And I just slammed the keyboard and got AI. I was like, well, it sounds legit. And then I played it like terrible times a night, so I always played with Japanese players, and they all thought I was a dude, so they all called me AI-kun, and I was like, I can deal with this.
I'm Ben, but you know me on the Backloggery as Axum Titanium. It's a name I've been using for a long time. I don't think I use any other names on the internet anymore.
Is that supposed to be a reference to Mario RPG?
It is, actually.
Ah, good choice.
Thank you.
I would never catch that. I only played Mario RPG, like, last year.
Oh, I've played it, like, countless times. But that's because I was a Super Nintendo kid back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I've only played...
Oh, go ahead.
I've only played Mario RPG a couple times, but I really liked it those times, so... And it seemed appropriate. Also, I was, like, 12 when I came up with it.
I didn't come up with this name until, like, I think 13 or 14, so... I've been sticking with this identity for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm an old 13-year-old or two.
I used to have a different name, but I switched it to Corey, like to my real name, kind of when I returned to games after being away for a long time. I just decided it was easier to just use. I guess you could say that maybe I was inspired by Cliffy B. Like
I was about to say Cliffy B.
Because it's cool. It's like such a nice, it's just a easy way to like. To see a real name and then associate that, I guess. Like it.
Corey C.
Yeah.
I can see the parallels.
All right. Well, welcome and thank you for joining me this week. Or this month, rather. I usually start off by asking everyone what they've... You know, a couple episodes ago, I decided to kind of branch out a little bit. Kind of talk to people what they've been playing lately. Like in addition to the game of the month.
All right. Let's see. What have I played this month, I guess? I played The Walking Dead this month.
That was not the first person shooter one.
No, the
Telltale one.
Yeah. That was really fun. I can't believe how much I enjoyed that game, because, you know, I figured, you know, I'm kind of tired of zombies at this point. They're kind of played. But I really enjoyed the way that they kind of create the illusion of choice within the game, and also made me really invested in the characters. And so yeah, that was probably my game of last month. Last month being March.
Did it live up to the hype?
I think it did. I think it really did. It made me feel all the feels.
I've only played through episode 4 so far. Does a really good job of... Episode 3 did a really good job of surprising you immediately. But I haven't actually continued since that point.
I can't imagine, like, stopping, because... I played one episode a day for 5 days.
That's a good way to do it. Actually, I played the first three, like, right in a row, and then there was a big gap between 3 and 4, and I just kind of stopped.
You might burn yourself out if you play that much in a row.
See, I just got the whole game on, like, disc, and so I just went through it sort of one after the other, so it felt like one long game to me. Didn't even feel like episodes.
Would you recommend it for a person who has never seen the TV series or read the comics?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yes, I haven't seen anything, but I hear the TV show beyond the first season isn't that great, so I'm not super inclined to go jump on getting on that just yet. Mm-hmm. But the game is really good, and that's what I have experience with, so I recommend the game.
That's good.
Yeah, I was just talking about the TV series recently about how the first season feels so much different than it has, like, than the second and third, and about how it's really just, like, been a spiral downwards since the beginning of the second season. Maybe even the last episode of the first season.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I still watch it, though. But, I don't know if I'll continue to watch it after this season, though. But I definitely want to... I should continue it. It's kind of sad that I haven't, considering the word of mouth, I guess. And all
the
awards.
Whole game was really good at making me feel, like, terrible about myself.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I hear the comic is unequivocally good. Like, all of it.
Really?
Yeah, so
you could get that version of, like, they had the limited edition of the PlayStation 3 version, or the 360 version. The disc version, you could get ahead a whole bunch of, like, a big graphic novel with it.
Or oh, something. Really?
Hmm.
It was like a limited edition type deal.
That'll work in my favor, because I usually pick up the physical versions of download games.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Aye, what have you been playing?
I've just been playing... Well, I completed Dark Souls, finally, and got, like, 1,000 gamer score on it.
Really?
Congrats.
Nicely done.
Congratulations. Thank you.
I just did that, like, 2 days ago, I think. It wasn't actually as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a lot worse. But what it really just came down to, like, a collectathon. So as long as I pretty much just stuck to what I did in the first game, but was more the first time through, but was more careful about picking everything up, it was pretty easy.
And you just got back from PAX East, right?
Yep.
How was it?
It was pretty good. They didn't have as many panels that I was interested in this year. Like, last year I was struggling to make it to every single panel that I wanted to make it to, because there was like 5 every day or something that I was interested in. This year it was kind of like, well, I'm interested in I guess, two panels on this day, but one of them I could skip if I was really not feeling it. Mm-hmm. So it was much more show floor-y this year. Lots of stuff was going on the show floor and sort of just like in the halls, mm-hmm. but it wasn't super panel heavy, at least for me. I felt like they sort of dropped generic panels for really almost overly specific ones. So instead of having, say, like a League of Legends panel, they had a how to correct player behavior in League of Legends panel, which was a lot less interesting to me. So they did that for a lot of things. So instead of like a game, or instead of a panel for like Irrational Games or like BioShock Infinite or something, it was like how they made the floor in BioShock Infinite or something. It was just like too specific. I kind of wish that they branched out a little more, made it more general.
Yeah, I missed you at PAX East this year. I saw Noi very briefly. I scoot past him, but then I couldn't actually end up finding him. But I kind of felt the same way about PAX. There were a couple good panels that I really enjoyed. One of them was the Double Fine panel, which, you know, I'm a backer of the Double Fine Adventure, so I've been getting some of the inside look at stuff. But it was also really fun to just like watch Tim Schafer talk for a little while. So yeah. I don't know what other panels you went to.
I went to the Storytime with Cliffy B. That was really good. Though I almost didn't get in. I was like at the very end of the line to get in, so I was super freaked out. But I also went to the Final Fantasy panel, and I'm not actually sure. I watched one panel on stream because I couldn't make it into it. The Game Like a Girl panel, which was actually really good. But I don't think I went to any of the others. They were either full when I got there, like the Capcom panel, or they just like didn't interest me that much because they were too specific. But I don't know. I had like last year was sort of like panel packs for me, but this year was sort of like accidentally meet people by happenstance packs. So I met a bunch of like the devs for BioShock Infinite because we were standing in the same food line.
Oh, that's cool.
And nice. I was making like really terrible clam chowder jokes with them because I didn't know who they were. Like they were all standing there and they were like, what are we even supposed to get? Like all this convention food and this weird ordering thing. And I was like, you're in Boston, get clam chowder or I'll kill you. And it was better than that, but I was just sort of like going off with them. And then all of a sudden they were like, hey, nice to meet you. Like we worked on BioShock Infinite. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
They just wound up like asking if they could eat dinner with me. And so I just was sitting there just eating dinner with the dudes from BioShock Infinite. So that was nice. And they were like telling me like different things about the game. But nice. Like that was the more fun like part of it for me, was walking around the show floor and meeting people. And
yeah, no, I had a lot of, I did that. I did something like that as well. I met with a bunch of people who I've met on the Idle Thumbs forums. Idle Thumbs is a podcast, another podcast, and like a lot of their, actually two of the members in the podcast worked on The Walking Dead, and the other one is working at Double Fine, so they're pretty connected within the industry. And you know, I had one of them was there working at the Double Fine panel. We went out to dinner with them. And with him and some of the people from the forums, and that was a lot of fun. Played some board games at the board game free play area. That was also really good. Meeting people is always the best part about conventions like that.
Yeah, those, like, speaking of like those areas, this is like my biggest complaint about PAX, is there was not enough free stuff. Like last year, I basically had to shove my suitcase full of stuff and couldn't even like carry most of it, and I wound up giving most of it away because there was just too much stuff. I was like, just take my free stuff. I can't hold all of this. But this year I was like begging people for free stuff and there was nothing. The only free stuff I got was like from the Capcom booth, and that was only because like I knew a guy who knew a guy, and so he hooked me up with like a free Dragon's Dogma bag and some posters. But oh, and I got a Mega Man pin. But other than that, I got like a beta code and the stuff that I like got off of the League of Legends booth, which was like consistently so crowded it was probably a fire hazard, but...
Yeah. I think it's telling that they didn't hand out bags this year.
Yeah.
And that was probably on purpose. They, like, usually at a lot of conventions, they just hand out free bags for you to hold all your stuff in.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. I don't know whether it was, like... Because it was everyone. It wasn't even, like, oh, this person who had a lot of swag last year doesn't have any this year. It was, like... The convention as a whole did not have free swag, so I'm wondering if there was something behind the scenes, like we're cutting down on swag or something.
Might be. It's possible.
Would you say it was more crowded this year than it was? Because I know the tickets sold out. I was actually planning on going, but tickets sold out in like 3 days or something like that.
I think it was about the same, mostly because it sold out last year too, and it was the same venue. So. I think it may have been a little more crowded because people have learned to scalp, like, really effectively.
Right.
And, like, make fake badges and stuff like that. And so I mean, I probably shouldn't out myself as doing this, but I actually bought it. Well, so I was actually supposed to be a speaker there on a panel. But, like, stuff sort of came up, so I wound up not doing it, but... I got a free speaker badge that I didn't have to pay for. However, I didn't know this, like, until I got there. And so I bought a 3-day. And I basically what I was going to do, because I'm a terrible person, is my friend showed up and he had bought a Friday, but I wanted him to see the panel that I was on. And so I said, I'm going to give you my 3-day and then go be like, hey, I lost my badge. Can I have another? But then I went up there and they were like, oh, you were supposed to have a speaker badge all along. So here's your badge. So it wound up being totally legit, but I was trying to be a bad person. But I guess that a lot of people did that and then sold it. And I guess there are a couple of people did it over and over. And so I know a lot of that was going on because PAX was starting to say like, okay, if you lose it once, that's it. Like you get one extra and then we're not giving you anymore.
Right.
Because they knew that that was going on. And there were just people outside, like you walk by them and they're like, got any extras and stuff like that. And so I think it might have been slightly more crowded because that was going on, but it wasn't like noticeably super like suffocatingly crowded, but it was a little more.
Well,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was about to say that was my experience as well. It was pretty, it didn't seem getting crowded.
So, Paperlink, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Harmonite recently on my 3DS.
How is that? I tried the demo. I thought it was pretty cool, but I'm really awful at rhythm games.
I thought it was brilliant, honestly. I love Bitrip Runner back on WiiWare.
Uh-huh.
That was about a couple years ago, and I'm also really good at rhythm games, like say Rhythm Heaven or Elite Beat Agents. So Harmonite was pretty much right up my alley.
Did you complete it? I think, you know, I always... Look, I'm always constantly amazed that you, like, complete everything.
Yeah, I do. That's my OCD going at it.
I don't even understand, like, how you do some of these things, too. Is it... It doesn't even seem like you really use, like, help at all to do a lot of it.
I use guides for like RPGs and such because sometimes RPGs have like a, you know, missable items and such. But for platformers, I generally go right at it.
You're just really good at games.
Pretty much. Pretty much. I believe Korvac has been noting this about me that I did complete Super Meat Boy with just a keyboard, so I can do some pretty amazing stuff. Supposedly.
Would you say that was the hardest thing you've ever completed?
Probably, yeah. Never doing that again, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine you ever even wanting to touch the game, period, again.
Yeah, honestly, while I do like Super Meat Boy by itself, after finishing it, I just didn't feel like going back to it ever again. I would rather play something like Donkey Kong Country Returns or... It's something more like a chill out kind of thing, like Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super Meat Boy is one of those games where you're just constantly stressed all the time while you're playing it.
Yeah. After that and VVVV, I kind of got sick of the whole super hard platforming genre.
I was sick of that before I even like started any of those games. I'm gonna, you know that like Mario GIF that's all over the internet where he like, it's the first level of the first Mario and he runs and jumps and just falls in the hole. That's like every game ever that involves platforming. I was like actually almost in tears the other night trying to finish the new Super Mario Bros. 2. I can't. I don't have those reflexes. I'm super jealous.
Yeah, I've seen like the extra downloadable packs for New Super Mario Bros. 2, and they are ridiculous, honestly.
If you think they're ridiculous, like I'm not even gonna look at them.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's me saying it's ridiculous, it's probably not meant for human hands.
This coming from Paper Link, who does everything.
Yeah.
I've always found it amazing that, you know, your definition of completion is to, like, get everything. And seriously, like, there's no shortcuts at all for you.
Pretty much.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of some of my accomplishments, such as Donkey Kong Country Returns. Like, I've done like all the freaking time trials for it. I've done some pretty crazy stuff on a regular basis. I just wish I could apply that to my RPGs as well.
Do you ever feel like have you ever had a time where you're just like, I'm just not gonna do this?
Yeah, at some point, mainly F-Zero GX.
Oh yeah, yeah. F-Zero GX is insanely hard.
It's insanely hard, but it's definitely one of the best racing games ever made.
Oh seriously,
it's probably my favorite overall. Actually,
I could probably agree with you on that, but it's just the story mode is insane.
Like seriously,
I've actually
like I had so much trouble with the one chapter where you had to like go through a bunch of closing doors. That chapter drove me insane.
I don't even think I ever. I don't know if I got to that one. Like the farthest I ever got was the one that's like on the roulette table.
Oh.
That's the one that finally broke me.
Yeah. Anyways, after Harmonite, I've also been playing Castlevania: Lords of Shadow.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, I bought it off of Noi about a week ago, and I've been enjoying it so far.
Great soundtrack.
Definitely, and the game looks absolutely beautiful, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's times where it has, like, some frame rate issues.
Pretty much all the time, honestly.
Yeah, but I mean, it works. It works. It fits with the speed of the game, I guess.
It fits with the aesthetic. It's much more methodical than, say, God of War or so.
Yeah. How far are you into it?
I'm about to reach the fourth chapter. Apparently, there's like 12 chapters and two DLC chapters as well. So I'm going at a good pace.
The thing that I thought was hilarious about it is the Patrick Stewart narration.
I felt like he was reading a storybook to me.
Well, not just that, but I feel like he says the same thing every time, and over again. Every chapter, he's saying the same thing. Just in different words.
All in different contexts.
Yeah. Gabriel knew he must go on. And you know,
go on, Gabriel, go on.
I'm not a big Castlevania person, so like I'm probably like saying something really irreverent, but how does it feel different from like an Iga Castlevania game?
I haven't played many of the Igavanias aside from Symphony of the Night. So most of my experience with the series comes from the classic ones. Overall, I do like the aesthetic and the feel of Lords of Shadow. So not knowing any of the other Igavanias, it's not too bad for me.
Okay, fair enough.
It does feel quite different.
It's definitely its own beast. It's definitely its own type of Castlevania.
Okay.
Skygar, what do you plan?
Let's see. In the past month, I've been playing. I finally broke down and opened and started in a Phantasy Star Zero for the DS.
Oh.
It's classic Phantasy Star Online type of game, very grindy and such. So I'm ashamed because it's a basically single player MMO and there's no community because it's like 5 years old and such. And also, in honor for the next game club of the month, I am going through Castlevania. What is it? Aria of Sorrow. Yeah, Aria of Sorrow.
Oh, so. Well, I mean, did you see the results?
Yeah, because that's what I did. Is I saw the results for the month of April's Game Club and Symphony of the Night. And like, I don't have that. So I was like, oh, but I haven't played or beaten Aria of Sorrow. So it's my little, you know, participation of what I can or can't do. You know.
I hate to break it to you, but Castlevania ended up not winning.
Oh, it didn't?
ActRaiser won by like one vote.
Yeah.
Probably mine.
At the very end.
Curse you, time zones. Anyway. Well, I started. I'm going through. It'll be good.
Aria of Sorrow is an excellent game, actually. It's besides that and Symphony of the Night are the two best ones like that.
Ah, interesting.
So... it's been a long time since I played that, since I played Aria of Sorrow, but it's good. I remember it being really good. All right. Myself, I've just been, I haven't been playing a lot of it, like, honestly. I kind of got into Dragon Quest II for a little bit.
Oh.
I actually
have fun with that.
I think it's actually pretty good. But I have a reproduction cartridge of the Super NES version, which has 1 and 2 on it, and it has like an English translation patched into it. But
see.
The English translation in part 2 has a bug where at one point, if you do a certain event before other things, you'll get caught in this loop, and the game you can't get out of it.
Like that's not good.
Like a text scrolling loop, and you can't get out of it because apparently it's only in the Super Nintendo version where one of your party members gets sick and you have to go get something for them to revive them. Mm-hmm. And if you do it before a certain point, every time you try to bring the item back to revive him, that's where it gets caught in the loop. So you can essentially never get that character back. And in a game where you only have 3 characters, like that's kind of a problem. So I had to start over completely. I was able to get back to the point I was at, like knowing where I needed to go. It wasn't very far into it, but it was probably took me about 6 hours to get there, 6-7 hours. And I was able to do it in like 3 hours the following day. But after I did that, I just kind of like stop playing it after I got myself caught up. So
that would do it.
Feels like something that happened to me with Phantasy Star on the Virtual Console.
What happened with that?
The first time I booted it up on the Wii, I played for about 4 or 5 hours. So I tried to save my game. I saved the game and then tried to go back to the Wii menu, and for some reason the Wii just crashed, like unexpectedly.
Oh, jeez.
So when I rebooted it and booted up the game again, I lost all my save data. So I had to retread all those 5 hours back again.
Were you able to do it a lot quicker, though? I mean, it's not really a quick game. I mean, it probably took you got to do a lot of grinding.
I did it around the same amount of time. That game has a lot of grinding in it.
Yeah.
I just don't deal well when that happens. Like, that stuff happens, and I'm just like, well, I'm done. We had a good run.
Yeah.
I didn't want to give up on it though, because I liked Phantasy Star 4, and I loved like the whole setting of Phantasy Star 1. So I wanted to keep going with the game, even though I had that horrible mishap.
I'm glad you went back to it. It's one of my favorites of all time.
It's pretty decent. I think this is like the first time I had an actual dungeon crawler RPG. So I'm willing to try out more stuff like say Shining in the Darkness and such.
Yeah, the dungeons in that are direct, like the viewpoints and everything are completely inspired by it. But I mean, the dungeons were such a difficult thing, and they got rid of those in the following games.
But, yeah, I could see why they did that.
Yeah, and luckily you can save anytime you want. So if you get trapped really deep, then you can slowly make your way out.
There's always a way out.
So let's go ahead and move on to Zelda Majora's Mask, a game that I felt was very polarizing for some people. Some people really love it. I did not like it.
Really?
Yeah, I made it to the first dungeon, and I had the rush to... I was so afraid I was going to run out of time. You know, there's that point where you have to chase the... to get the... the treasure after the first dungeon, and you chase that ghost or whatever. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I remember.
You're chasing the Deku or the...
It's the Deku Butler chase.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. That thing.
And I was
thankfully that's actually optional.
Okay.
Well, it is optional, but I mean, I thought it wasn't, so I was almost out of time, and I'm chasing this guy, and it'll send you back to the beginning anytime you mess up.
Right.
And I thought I was going to run out of time, and I said, if I run out of time on this and I get sent back and, you know, like I have to start the day over, then I'm going to quit. I made it, but I then immediately the day started over, and I wanted to go and explore. But once you reset the days, then you have to like fight the boss of the dungeon and do all that stuff again. Mm-hmm. Which was hugely unappealing to me.
There's a lot of safeguards in place for that, but yeah, I can see how the structure can annoy some people.
Question, Corey.
Sure.
Is this your first time playing Majora's Mask, or have you played it while you were younger?
No, this was my very, very first time.
Okay. Because yeah. I'm pretty sure the opinions of different people will probably depend on, like, you know, naturally when they grew up with it or not, but probably, like, what older games they've played or not.
Well, I've played a lot of old games, but I just did not... I'll probably go back to it.
I, like, kind of found a way around that, because I felt the same way after I beat the first dungeon. I was like, oh, sick, now all this water isn't poison anymore. I kind of want to roll around and look at stuff. But then of course I had to reset because I was like, oh, I'm getting a little low on time and I'm scared. But if you just go back, you can just, it'll immediately put you into the boss fight. And if you beat, we're using like the slowdown time song and stuff.
I was using that, but I heard that the, getting the rabbit hood makes a huge difference too.
Yeah, I did that really early on, too. So yeah. I got the rabbit hood, and then I used a slowdown time song, and I would just go back to the dungeon. And if you just go back to a dungeon you've already beaten, it'll see that you have, like, the boss's remains. And he's like, oh, like, you have my remains. Come and fight me again. And so it'll put you, like, you don't have to do the dungeon again. It'll just put you immediately into the boss fight. And if you beat him again, it basically puts the area back to as if, like, you've done the dungeon again. And so if you can beat him, you can pretty much beat him on, like, the first half of the first day and then just have all that time to just, like, roll around. So that's how I got around that, because at first I was like, well, that's dumb. I want to explore. But then I was like, oh, well, I can just beat the boss and then spend the next 2.5 days exploring until I have to reset time again.
Yeah, that's the thing that I found about Majora's Mask, is that it makes a really bad first impression, because, you know, we all play games. We like beating games, I'm assuming, because we have a backloggery. Mm-hmm. And, like, progress in this game doesn't appear to save itself after every reset, and that is really, really unappealing to a lot of people, you know, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And after you get past that first hump and you start understanding how the game, like, how progress in the game is made, then people tend to start liking the game. So, Corey, I'm guessing that you noticed you went through the first cycle, you beat the boss, and then you got and then you had this really strong backlash at the fact that you might have to do this again. And the fact is, you actually don't have to do it again unless you want to do something specifically that is, like, unlocked after you clear all the poison in the swamp and whatever. So, like, once you understand the way that the mechanic works, basically, it becomes a much more enjoyable game.
Okay. I mean, it was hugely unappealing to me, and you were absolutely right in what you said. You know, after seeing all that, after doing all that stuff, and then going back, I thought, oh, I really don't want to have to do all this stuff again, and it immediately turned me off for the game.
Yeah, and, like, the thing is, like, after you've beaten the swamp dungeon, you've got the bow, you've gotten the boss's remains, and that's really all you need to do in the swamp at that point. And then you can go to the next dungeon, which is in the north, which is the snow dungeon. And the only thing that you need to access that is the bow. And once you have it, it doesn't get reset when you play the Song of Time. So that's how you progress in the game. You don't even have to worry about the swamp anymore for the rest of the game, unless you want to do, like, side stuff. And that's how the game works. You don't have to beat all four bosses within one cycle for it to count.
I see.
Yeah, that was my backlash moment, was the snow boss, because before you get up there, there's so much annoying stuff you have to do, like carry this hot water to melt stuff, but oops, it can cool.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And that stuff was making me super angry, and I was like, I don't want to have to do this, because I actually didn't go back and do the first boss again to explore the area. I just sort of gave up and moved on. But then there was so much that I wanted to explore in, like, the melted snow area, but I didn't have enough time, so I was super angry for a little while, and I was like, I don't want to have to run all that hot water around again, that was so annoying, I don't want to deal with that. But then I finally realized, oh, I can just walk back up to the boss and beat him, and it just immediately resets the area back to as if I had done all that. And because especially the second boss really isn't that difficult, it's sort of spin after him, run into his legs a lot, so...
It's a chase mission, basically.
Yeah, so I was like, well, this is actually pretty all right with me now, because I was mad at first, but then I decided to push on and see if I could make it work, and then after that I had 3 solid days to explore that area, and I got a ton of stuff done, so that's when I sort of got okay with the mechanic.
Yeah, there's definitely a moment where you realize all this stuff, all the progress that you've made matters. All of it matters, even though it doesn't look like the game is keeping track of all this stuff, or it doesn't feel like that at first. And that's usually when you kind of understand what's going on. So, Corey, I would definitely recommend you keep going a little bit until you figure out that point, and see if you still like the game see if you still don't like the game at that point.
What I didn't like was the save mechanic, because I was playing on the GameCube version, but I was playing it on a Wii, and so I was having a lot of weird slowdown issues and stuff like that, like frame rate issues, where I would be like supposedly running really fast, but it was kind of jaggedy and laggy.
The GameCube emulation isn't exactly pretty good at all.
Yeah,
Majora's Mask is very hard to port.
Yeah,
being Majora and N64 game, just getting it anywhere else is very difficult. So.
Yeah, it wasn't acting fabulously for me, but I thought it was just a frame rate issue, so I didn't think much of it and wasn't being super careful. And then at one point, I had been playing for a little while, and it froze. And because you can't
that happens.
You have to reset time or just like do a quick save and stop playing. I wasn't prepared for the freeze, and I had to go back and do all this stuff again. So that made me really angry. That's the huge problem I have with the save system, is that it sort of punishes you for saving. But like, that's what made me lose so much progress when the game decided to just freeze up on me.
Yeah,
that's why I decided to play the actual N64 cartridge that I own, because although I have the collector's edition on the GameCube, it is known for a lot of freezing issues, and with the way Majora's Mask save systems work, that's obviously not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Majora's Mask is also one of the few N64 games that uses the expansion pack, and it requires the expansion pack.
Yes, so it does.
So it's kind of it does make the game really hard to emulate, because you know they have the expansion pack, they decide to put like a billion extra special effects and like bloom lighting, whatever, lens flare, all that stuff.
There's a lot of blur effects in it.
It's a pretty visually intensive game for the N64, and the emulation on the GameCube version is not great. I would be extremely happy if they decide to do a 3DS version of it, because of Majora's Mask, because I think it's worth it for one, but for two, it'll just make playing the game much more enjoyable on newer systems, because, you know, for obvious reasons.
And after how good the Ocarina of Time remake was done, I would definitely go for a Majora's Mask remake on 3DS.
That would be very interesting, because Majora's Mask is very psychedelic and like twisted, and it's in the nature of the game and the story. So if you get some good Nintendo people and just to have that concept and use a 3D, that would probably be extremely intense and well done.
That was
it's one of my favorite titles in the series, just because of how oblique it is. It's rooted in atmosphere and the originality of its concept, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There really is no other Zelda game like it, which kind of disappoints me, because a lot of Zelda games recently have been using a strict formula.
I can test it. I can test that, because Majora's Mask I find to be very much like, I would say, more classic Zelda. It really reminds me of like the first one, and Wind Waker, and Link to the Past, because right there you just go into the game, and at its heart, really, is a whole bunch of like quests and secrets, and you know, it's because like there's only four dungeons, but most of the gameplay is just actually helping the people in the towns. Like when I first played it, I sort of got, I don't know if it's because I read the manual or I was able to figure it out, but it's like, you know, I kind of got the things like, okay, I'm not going to do everything in the 3 days. I'm just going to spend this 3-day cycle to, let's say, follow this one person, you know, to explore an area. So I spend a 3-day cycle in Clock Town. I spend a 3-day cycle in the swamp. I spend a 3-day cycle in the field, just trying to figure out this world and such. So, and that's very much like in the original Zelda, where, you know, boom, you know, it's dangerous to go alone. Here, take the sword, and then you just go out and blow up and burn everything, trying to figure out that world.
I can see that, because once you get the bow in Majora's Mask, you're basically free to go anywhere you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Skygore, I definitely agree. Majora's Mask is my favorite game in the entire series. Let me just preface everything that I'm about to say with that statement. It's definitely, when I think about what Majora's Mask is about, I think I would say that it's about, you know, one, it's about helping people, and two, it's about understanding that you can't help everyone. Like, and there's a lot of dissonance in that in those two things, because, you know, on the one hand, you're trying to save this doomed city, this doomed world, and you're trying to do as much good as you can, but you also only have 3 days to do it. So you have to pick and choose who you help on any given cycle, and you actually can't help everyone in the entire world within one cycle. It's literally impossible. I know, because that was my master run for this game club. You literally can't help everyone in the entire world. It's not possible, and you know that is meaningful in some way, because you know a lot of games, you can help everyone. You can have this mythical, like, 100% complete, you are the best person ever kind of situation, whereas in reality that's not really the case. And I think when Majora's Mask tells you, you know, these are all the people who need saving, these are all the people who you can help, but you can't help all of them. And, you know, that's meaningful, I think.
It's so much deeper to me.
It is pretty deep as well, considering that some of the people you can save in the game don't actually have happy endings.
Yeah, that too. Like, for example, a very big, very huge example is the three masks, the three transformation masks. All of them are dead people that you're kind of helping, you know, set right what went wrong in some way, like give them their last rest by doing their like last request, whatever, that kind of thing. So, you know, they're dead at the end of the game, regardless of whether you win or not. And, you know, even the Deku mask, who you don't see, you find his dead body at the beginning, before you even get to Clock Town, at the very beginning of the game. And he doesn't actually get his own story. You don't hear about him, but you Corey was racing against his father, the Deku butler, and, you know, there's a lot of pain in this world, and when Majora's Mask is trying to tell you that you can help, but you're not everyone. You can't save everyone.
I can test that, because like the whole point though is that you do all these various cycles helping people, and sort of at the end, all the work that Link has done has been compiled, and released through the credits system. Or at least it's displayed in the credits, because it's each mask, and well, it's not each mask, but each like bomber notebook person you do,
it's each
you
mask.
Get the little stamp, you get their ending, and you know
that's true.
But they're not saved for that cycle. I mean, they're only saved for that cycle. They're not saved.
They're saved on the fourth day, though.
I mean, it's at that point you're kind of getting into the tension between mechanics and like canon within the series.
It's a timeline theory.
Yeah, the timeline theory. Like, did Link actually save everyone because he broke through the fourth day, and therefore everything like merged into like some weird single timeline afterwards? Like,
he did that in Ocarina, didn't he, with the Temple of in the Spirit Temple?
Yeah, I mean, time travel is weird. I don't know if I want to think about that too hard.
That's the session for another day.
I feel like that should be like the tagline of the game. Like, time travel is weird, man. Wearing dead people's faces is weird, man. Like, this whole game just has this, like, really weird things where at first I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I really sat down and thought about it. And it's like, I'm carrying people's body parts around.
Yeah, it's kind of like the overall feel of it. I just felt like it was really like Zelda on drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Zelda having an LSD trip.
Yeah. Seriously, I mean, it just makes you think, like, I wonder if these guys, the people making this game were, like, on some shit when they were making it, because
well, it was made
so
in a
weird
year.
Sometimes.
I mean, the NPCs are weird. Like, the banker dude who likes to just slam his knees over and over when you're, like, giving him money and...
Well, oh, that's just normal shopkeeper, you know, banging the fan for like, you know, come buy this.
But all the NPCs were like so creepy to me. Like, even the ones who looked somewhat normal had like weird tics that were like, ugh. But a lot of them just looked like tripped out and creepy, and don't know, I never got as... I think the only thing from, like, Ocarina of Time that creeped me out this much was, like, the village in the future. Or the town, like, after the time jump where everyone's, like, creepy...
Like, zombies.
Creepy dudes, yeah. That was the only thing that, like... I basically start Majora's Mask, and I get that feeling from, like, every part of the game. Just everything is creepy.
Well, what about...
The entire game is very unsettling.
Yeah,
I think that was by design.
One thing that I liked, and this kind of relates to Ocarina of Time, is the way that after all the events of Ocarina of Time, I always say Ocarina. I don't know if a lot of people, maybe it's just my accent or whatever, but how Link has become this like incredible badass, especially I never really thought about it until you're doing like jumping between platforms and he's doing these like sideways cartwheels jumping in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that touch when they added that to Majora's Mask.
Yeah. Even, it gives him
Tails mentions it.
Power of the expansion pack.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what it is? Is that why they
I don't think
it's only doable because of the expansion pack?
Yeah, it's a joke, but it does the animations were massively improved from Ocarina of Time.
Yes, definitely.
But it just seemed like such so much more of a. It gave you the feeling that this version of Link has been through a lot, and is awesome at this point.
Link's very pretty awesome. True. I think
he's awesome, but he's awesome, but he always has a. Pretty crappy ending.
He made a friend. What's crappy about that?
Well, he went to Termina to search for his other friend Navi, but he never finds her at the end.
So he's still
in a way that's kind of depressing.
That's true. I haven't finished obviously, but so at the end, does he just go back home? Like what?
At the end, he continues his journey for Navi.
Right.
You just go, because this is, actually, isn't the original name of this game Zelda Gaiden?
Yes.
In Japanese. Zelda Gaiden. Yeah, Gaiden is just a side story, just a little adventure on the side, which for like all its apocalyptic saving the world, this actually does seem like just a little story on Link's adventure. You know, just a little. It's actually just a 3-day trip on this in a bigger journey he's doing,
right? Which we actually never find out the ending to.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you play the other games, but then again, that goes back to timeline theories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's kind of everybody's history with this? Who played this when it came out?
Me. First time I played it was in 2003.
I
rented it as soon as it came out.
I played it when it came out. I had just like couch co-opted Ocarina of Time with my neighbor,
mm-hmm.
and then Majora's Mask came out a couple a year later, and so I was really excited and I played it as soon as I got it.
Yeah, I got it like the first year it came out, and I also beat it within the same year it came out. So.
I had like rented Ocarina of Time from old Blockbuster for a while, and then as soon as Majora's Mask came out, I started renting that. So I played it a lot when I was a kid, but I was like the worst when I was a kid. I never really focused on beating anything. I pretty much just wanted to like mess around in the world and like test things out, like see what I could make happen. So I don't think I ever beat it. I just did like lots of different parts of it.
Yeah, Majora's Mask is actually really interesting for that, because it's like, it's the closest to open world that Zelda has ever gone to after, like, Zelda 1.
And yeah.
That, you know, it's very, like, as soon as you get the bow, it's very open. You can basically go everywhere from that point on.
Yeah.
And so for the Backloggery Game Club, I decided to do a master run of Majora's Mask. And the challenge that I imposed on myself was the 6-day challenge, which is beat the entire game using just the first three days after you get the ocarina. And on top of that, I also got the couple's mask and the best sword.
Excellent.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was like my, like, you know, what are all the things that I could possibly cram into 3 days and do all of them? And that's when you kind of figure out that, no, it's actually literally impossible to help everyone in the entire world within one 3 day period.
Did you have to like plan stuff out beforehand? Like, did you sit down and write down everything that you want to try to do? Like, actually have like a plan with that?
Yeah, so I did have to do a bunch of planning for this. So the 6 day challenge has been around for a while because, you know, people like speedrunning things, and like there was a route for that. But I also wanted to do the couple's mask on top of that, and I also wanted to get the gilded sword. So I had to kind of rearrange some things in order to make it all fit. So I have a document that like lists all the things that I need to do, and it ended up being a little bit harder than I thought it would be. I don't know about how many of you saw Triforce do his 6 day challenge on the live stream.
That was an incredible stream.
It was really
New Year's, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I caught the tail end of that, but like as you might have seen during the stream, the first day is the hardest, and you have to cram a lot of things into the first day.
Right.
But then after that, it gets a little bit easier, and you know, it was really fun. I actually only beat it about an hour before this podcast. I finished my run successfully.
You just did it today.
Right at the finish line.
Yeah, seriously. Okay, so the two of you that played it pretty much like the first year it was out, what was kind of your reaction to it before? Because I feel like it's gained this notoriety of being really good by, like, really loved by a lot of people over the years that have come to play it. I mean, did you have, like, the same, like, oh, I love this immediately? Or did it take a little while? Like, what was your first reaction? Do you remember what your first reaction was upon playing it after not playing anything in the series like it, except for, like you said, the first game?
Okay, I'll go first. I liked it right when it came out, and while I was playing it, I in fact liked it better than Ocarina of Time, because when I said Ocarina would, just for the comparison of the games that came out, like, you know, Ocarina is very much like Link to the Past, and I prefer Link to the Past because there's Ocarina is very, you know, very cinematic and talky, and Link to the Past is more like dungeon crawling. But here in Majora's Mask, I love the fact that, you know, there's all these people that you know, all these little quests that you have to explore, and you have to follow the people and find out their schedules, and a lot of different little secrets that you didn't have until, like I said, like, you know, the very first Zelda, and also in Link to the Past, because like once in Link to the Past, like once you get, I believe, like once you come out of Sanctuary, you know, you still have the whole overworld that you can explore before doing the dungeons, and coupling that with in Majora's Mask, that there are lots of very nice moments that make you go aww, because you're actually, this game, it's more apocalyptic, but it doesn't actually feel like you're saving the world like in a big epic like in the other, like any typical RPG. But here you're actually helping people, and there's lots of several scenes that you just, that's the payoff. I mean, you have the Anjuan Cafe, you have a Don Garo when you actually gather the frogs and you hear the little like song play, you know, the little frog chorus. It's, you know, Link's conducting. You have Pamela and her father hugging. If you do the Romani quest twice, Romani gives Link a hug at the end, possibly as a reward. So, just for all its twistedness, there is a very nice heart. And, like, I know that the designers are using the, you know, the proper Japanese kokoro, you know, like, it really hits the heart at these different points. So, I got that.
Yeah,
it's a very heartwarming game when you complete some of the quests.
Yeah, I definitely agree as well. I, you know, I played The Walking Dead earlier this month, and, you know, I really felt something for those characters. I think I feel the same way about this game. Like, you kind of get to know these people. You get to know their schedules, what they're like, what they're doing at any given time of the day. And you kind of, you get really invested in these NPCs. They're NPCs, but you really get to know who they are, and you feel empathy for them, and you want to help them. And I really enjoyed the way that the game creates these relationships between you and the characters. That was one of my favorite things about the game, and it succeeded really well at it, because you could, you know, reset time and see what they were doing at any given time. Or you can even, like in some cases where if you fail to help them, you can see what the aftermath is like, because, you know, you were unable to, you know, save them in time. And now the ranch's cows are all abducted by aliens, and they're, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's another good Walking Dead tie-in. Is it was another game that was really going to make me just, like, feel bad for my failures. There were just times where I was just like, wow, I just happened to be, like, an hour late here for this thing that I didn't know was going to happen. And as a result, like, these people's lives are ruined, and now I just feel totally responsible for it.
But unlike The Walking Dead, you can fix this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's pretty good at making you feel responsible. You're like, well, these are these people's lives. These are these people's cows. But for some reason, it's my responsibility to take care of their cows for them, and I'm gonna take care of these cows.
By God, I'll take care of these cows.
Gotta save the cows.
Axel, what was your
vitamin D?
Axel, what was your reaction when it first came out, though? Did you immediately fall in love with it? Was it kind of like, oh, this is like the first one was? Had you played the first one at that point?
The first Zelda?
Yeah.
I hadn't. So I had just come off of playing Ocarina, you know, the year before. I really liked Majora's Mask when it first came out. And, you know, I was hearing things from other people, not myself or my neighbor who we played it together. Majora's Mask very quickly got that reputation as, like, the less good Zelda, like N64 Zelda, you know, on the internet, and, like, you know, just talking about it with people. And that kind of made me like it more, because I wanted to, like...
Because you get it, man.
Well, like, I mean, it made me want to...
understand.
I kind of, like, tried to inoculate myself against that by, like, liking it more in response. But I also just like it a lot in general. And only recently, like in the past couple of years, that has Majora's Mask, like, sort of turned that like imperceptible, like, internet liking point, where, like, a lot of people looking back like Majora's Mask now, as opposed to hate, and, like, even though some of them might have hated them when it first launched. And, like, I see the same thing happened with Wind Waker as well. Like, everyone was like, oh, cartoon Zelda, and, like, everyone was making fun of Wind Waker. But now, yeah, Zelda. But now, like, whenever you talk to people on the internet or, like, in person about Wind Waker, they're like, oh, yeah, it's, like, my favorite Zelda. Or, like, it's one of my favorite Zeldas. And, like, I think the same thing happened between these two games, where they were initially, like, really, really disliked for a lot of reasons. Some of them good reasons. But the general opinion has shifted since then.
I remember the same thing, because when it first came out and I started renting it, I was actually super scared of it. I thought, like, the moon was scary.
It is scary.
It is scary.
It is very scary.
I was like super terrified of it, though. Like, I couldn't look up at it.
It's nightmare fuel.
I was super scared of the moon. I was super scared of most of the NPCs. I was scared of, like, the creepy music that starts happening, like, the later you get into the game. I was just, like, super afraid of it, and so I would talk about it with people, like, oh, this game is so scary, and, like, of course, I was probably in elementary school, and of course everyone was like, oh, it's not as good as Ocarina of Time, it's I forgot what, I mean, it was elementary schooler criticisms. It was like, it's not as cool, but there was something about it. What?
Fake bravado.
Yeah, it was something that everyone was just like, oh yeah, no, it's not as good as the first game, but like now like in my later years as I've aged, like now that I play it again, I'm like, wow, this is surprisingly deep for like the time that it was made.
The kids that were against it were probably like, you don't play as badass old grown-up Link.
Yeah, I think that was part, like, it was like, well, you have to be a kid. Kids are dumb, even though we're in fifth grade.
So Paper Link, you didn't play until 2003. Did you play it on the... You played it on the 64, though.
Yes, I played it first on the N64, and then I got the collector's edition about a year later, I think.
So did you kind of go in, did you love it right away?
It took some time for me to get into the game. Going into Majora's Mask, I just came off of the Wind Waker, which I really loved. So it was a different experience for me at the time.
How would you rank it now? I'm just gonna ask everyone that. Like, how would you, I know someone said it was their favorite in the series. But how would you rank it?
That was you, Corey.
I would put Majora's Mask within the upper tier of Zelda games. It's probably two or three in terms of the 3D Zelda games. My personal favorite is still Ocarina of Time to this day, so.
I already said that it's my favorite.
What do you think it... I mean, when did you immediately decide that it's your favorite, or were you kind of like over time? You just said, you know, I had the best time with this one that I've had with any of the other ones.
I'm pretty sure I thought it was my favorite at the time, but at the time I also hadn't played that many Zeldas.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I've kind of backfilled the rest of the list by playing other Zelda games. And also, not a lot of them had come out at that point. This was like, what, 2000? 2000 was it when it came out, I think?
2000.
2000, so...
So that's pretty late. It was late in the... I mean, I was working...
PS2 was out by that time.
Yeah.
This is true. It was very late in the N64 cycle, but, like, half of the Zelda games that existed came out after it. Isn't that right? I think half of all Zelda games came out after Majora's Mask, so at this point.
Yeah.
Does that make you feel old?
It sure does.
I
have a hard time ranking it. Like, I've always had a hard time even comparing, like, the N64 Zeldas to, like, the Zelda-type games to now, like, the Twilight Princess and newer Zeldas. Like, I just have a hard time comparing them at all just because they all feel so different to me. Like, they all have the same background, but to me it's sort of like comparing different Final Fantasies. Like, they all have the same background stuff going on, but they feel so different, like, atmosphere-wise to me that I just have a hard time sort of comparing them to each other. I guess I'd like it more than Ocarina just because I sort of like the, like, going forward and backward in time aspect, but I have a hard time comparing it to anything after that. Just because they feel so different to me.
And Skybar, how would you rank it?
Oh, I don't even know how to rank it because it's, one, I, like, this is the limit of my Zelda experience. Like, I think I've played Oracle of Ages, and so, like, I don't know anything after Majora's Mask. Although there's like really great moments, but when I have to acknowledge that, you know, this is a hard game to get into. And B, I didn't quite enjoy it through. I haven't enjoyed it in like continual playthroughs because I know what to do, but I don't remember when. Like, not the schedule, the people, but like, at what item do I need to do it? So like, this is a really good, it's almost like it's an artsy like Zelda game, so it's up there in value. So I would say maybe it's like second or third best Zelda, depending on your taste and such.
Just a quick aside, I went and looked it up. Majora's Mask is the sixth Zelda, and now there are 16. So it was more than half.
Well, how many of these are mainline Zelda games and not just side stuff like
There's 16 mainline.
Yeah, it's hard. Like they're all mainline essentially at this point.
I'm so
like the only spinoffs are like the Crossbow Training and the Tingle games.
Yeah, except for those. This was the first appearance of Tingle. Isn't it?
Yes, it is.
First appearance of Tingle.
Yeah.
So this game made Tingle?
Yeah.
This game has made Tingle.
I hate this game now. This is the worst Zelda. It changed my ranking.
I never knew where he was from, and then you see him pretty much right off the bat. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, I had heard and seen pictures of him and, like, heard about him, but I've never actually seen him in a game before.
The 35-year-old.
I know.
As a fairy.
You know, it's really funny.
I'm 35, and I'm waiting for my own personal fairy in this green jumpsuit.
What's really funny. So, I'm 34. I'm 34, and I was, when I saw that, I was like, I'm almost as old as Tingle is. I thought about it.
You know what your path in life is now?
Yeah,
cosplay for next year.
Yep, MAGFest cosplay.
Yeah.
Do it, Corey.
Oh, it's okay. No. But I thought it was very funny that Tingle and I are almost the same age.
If Tingle... Wait, when did Majora's Mask come out? Did you say 2000?
2000.
Yeah. So if he was like 35 in 2000, he's like... 48 now.
Yeah.
Kind of a scary thought.
Yeah. So what's everyone's favorite part? What would you say is the thing that sticks with you the most?
Zora Mask, because I can switch.
The Land of the Dead.
What did you like about it? I didn't reach that point, so I'm not even familiar. What's it like? What did you like?
Basically, it's like a combination of like a desert area and say the Shadow Temple from Ocarina of Time. There's a lot of undead creatures in there, but the backstory of the region is the most interesting of the four, because there used to be a kingdom there. That was at war with another kingdom, and that particular kingdom's spies. Are still scrounging the area to this day.
As ghosts.
And the Garrow ninjas.
Yeah.
And the NPCs to help there. There's a researcher who got cursed by going down a well, and he's basically being turned into a zombie, a Gibdo. So the payoff from that particular quest was quite heartwarming, when you see his little girl. Hug at the end when he's restored.
Yeah, that's a good moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Axel? What's your favorite? What was your favorite part?
I think my favorite section of the game was the ranch section, like everything to do with that. Like not so much the alien fighting, but like all of, like at some point you get to defend the milk cart from attackers. So you get to shoot, you get to pump the Gourmand brothers with full of arrows. But like I think that section, like the lead up to it and like right afterwards, was like a really emotional section, because you know Cremia is talking about how her father died, and now they're running, her and her sister are running the ranch by themselves. They've got problems because you know cows have been disappearing because of aliens, and then while you're on this delivery, you get attacked by a bunch of bandits and you have to defend her, and then at the end she thanks you for all of your help, and she gives you a mask, and the mask is a symbol that says that she considers you an adult. Like, that's in the description of the mask. So I thought that was a really like strong connection that I had with one of the characters, and that made it really memorable for me.
And Skygor, what's your favorite part?
I don't know, because The game is a chore for me, so there's like nothing that I look forward to aside from like, you know, I've got the stuff done and now I can save. But
your favorite part's being done with the game.
Yeah. Favorite part is playing the Song of Time. Let's see. Favorite part. I would just say maybe being a goal. These are my favorite part. The transformations. In games, I love any type of mechanic where you have you're able to transform and have different powers. So, Demon's Crest, Capcom Disney series. I'm probably sure Mega Man DX. So I love the Deku Mask, the Goron Mask, and the Zora Mask, and all the stuff I can do using their characters and powers and puzzles within the game. That.
Dude, the transformations freak me out because he like screams.
No, it's like painful.
But he has like his 40-year-old man voice.
Exactly. When he becomes the Deku Scrub, it sounds so scary. And I was like, I have to hear this every time. And then I found out that I could skip it. I was like, thank God.
Yeah. He like screams, but he's like a kid, but he has like this like old man voice. He's like, oh, and he's yelling. And it freaks me out so much. And he has all the like, his eyes are bulging and stuff.
Yeah.
That like really bothers me. But I mean, I like the Zora mask because it turned all the water sections into like, hey, look at me doing all these sweet tricks. But like.
Yes, dolphin jumping.
Yes. But I don't know, just like
controls.
Scared me so much.
I was like in the amount that I played, I would say probably my favorite part. You know, I think that there's like one thing that I really thought was really funny is like the main person you're trying to get Majora's Mask back for. I love how it would like the angle would be how they edit the angle every time.
Like different cuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always like looking at you different in each cut.
Yeah. That was terrifying.
Yeah. I thought it was very fun though. And I got a good laugh out of it.
I mean, it was super cool, but also super scary. Like I was actually, another podcast that a friend of mine does, but I was kind of like, I'm going to sneak in playing Majora's Mask while we're talking. So I was sitting there playing and I actually hit that part like while we were all in the podcast. And I just went dead silent because I was just sitting there like, whoa, like this is really creepy. And all my friends were like, Kelly, what's your opinion? Kelly, where are you? And I was like, yo, this game's so scary. Like it was just, it stood out to me. I don't think any other like N64 game that I've played had just like this really almost cinematic like creepiness to it like that did.
It's almost like
where he's like, oh, I'm gonna look happy now I'm gonna look really angry.
It's like creepy like, in almost like a Willy Wonka kind of way.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Very whimsical.
That's almost the worst kind of way.
Yeah.
That is quite creepy.
The other thing that I really loved about it is the first time you step outside and it's like, finally they bring back the Zelda.
Original Zelda theme.
Yeah. And I've always held a grudge against Ocarina of Time because they didn't have it. And it was very nice getting to hear it again. For some reason, like all the games ever since Ocarina of Time, except for the portable games, have not had it. And it's like one of the best game songs ever, I think.
They re-added it to the 3DS remake of Ocarina.
Really? Not in Overworld?
Not on the Overworld, but as a second credits theme.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch that they did for the remake.
Huh.
Where is it?
It's the second credits roll. You get it after the end of the game.
Oh, okay.
It credits the porting team that did the 3DS remake. It was a different team than Nintendo in-house.
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad that they did that. But it's still not where it's supposed to be. I was always under the impression that they knew that they could never top the Link to the Past version. So they never tried.
I would argue that the version in Skyward Sword's credits theme was pretty darn good too.
Yeah, but it's still in the and the ending credits, you know? I'm glad that they have it in there, but it's still, like, I want to hear it all the time. You know, it would have been great if in Skyward Sword they play it when you're, like, flying around. But that was definitely, I was very happy to hear it in this. So does anybody have any, I'm going to start wrapping up. Does anyone have any final thoughts on the game? Anything that they would like to say about it?
Give it a chance. Especially if you didn't like the later Zelda games since then.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely give it a chance. Also, if you didn't like it, you know, when you played it 10 years ago, or however long it was, give it another try. You're a different person now. The game is still is a really good one, and I think you should definitely give it a second chance if you didn't like it the first time.
I think you guys have convinced me to go back and give it another shot. So.
Give it a chance, but it's creepy.
Yeah.
If I ever did a review for this game, instead of like a number or a letter, I would just write creepy.
Yeah. It's creepy on a scale of 1 to 10.
And also,
the scale of 1 to 10, this game is creepy.
Also, don't play the GameCube version. Play it on N64 or the Wii.
Yes. Yeah, I can back that one up. Sick of freezing and like slow, like it's like I'm on the moon. Every time I jump, I just kind of float.
At that point, why did they even, if it wasn't going to run right, why even put it on that collection?
It was a free disc.
Gotta cash in. Plus, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's not that bad, but it was pretty bad for the, I guess that's a weird thing of me to say. I was going to say it was bad for the first hour, but it hasn't been that bad since. I think maybe I just got used to it. If I actually played like a proper version of it, I would probably be like, why is this so fast?
Honestly, it's pretty slow on the S4 anyways. That frame rate.
Well, thanks a lot for joining me, everyone. And we'll see everyone next month with ActRaiser. You're with your baby.